Welcome back to the Roundtable. Some stirring bumper music there from Mr. Hopper. 12 minutes after 9 o'clock on a Tuesday morning, and we start off our program today with the Roundtable panel. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We're joined by Alan Shartok. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. I'm waiting for my consultation with the re-entry expediter.
I beg your pardon?
Well, the space program, in order to bring the guys back, they have to do other people back. They have to do what's called re-entry expediting.
Okay.
And when you go to vacation, then you have to come back. You need a re-entry expediter.
Yes. Yes, it does take a little time. It's kind of like the bends. You have to come up very slowly.
Yeah, you do.
And Mike Spain, the Times Union Associate Editor, is here. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Ray. Good morning, Alan.
Are you feeling ready to go?
Oh, I am. I haven't been on vacation, so I'm all expedited.
Spoken like a newspaper man.
I've always wondered about this. This might be a good time to ask Mike very quickly. Mike, what do you enjoy more, working here with us or working at the Times Union?
Well, that's...
First of all, who pays you?
But I must say my loyalty is to my newspaper.
Yeah, you should say that.
Yeah, that's where the paycheck, from where the paycheck comes. So, of course, we expect you to say
that. Would say that, but you're implying he's lying.
I'm not.
Yes, you are, because you're saying, of course, you know, he has to say that because he works at the Times.
All right. Well, I think he likes the newspaper. He's been in the business a long time, so he likes that angle. So we begin today on a sad note. A former U.S. Senator from Vermont, Jim Jeffords, died yesterday. He was 80, and he played a big role in sort of changing the balance of politics in Washington.
Yeah, he did. He fell out of he was one of the first to see what was coming. In other words, that the Republicans were moving far to the right. And, you know, he was a progressive in many ways. He was, you know, as you know, he had a series of government posts and then was the only congressman. I always love the fact that there's only one congressman from Vermont.
As many senators.
That's right, twice as many senators. And then, you know, he goes to the Senate, is then eventually replaced by Bernie Sanders. But he changes from a Republican to independent, but he caucuses with the Democrats, which is exactly what Bernie does also.
And that happened right after George W. Bush came into power, right?
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
So he had his issues with Reagan. Jeffords was fairly strong militarily.
Yeah, he was.
But socially, much further left than the Reagan Republicans.
Yeah, no, yeah, on everything from the... He was great on the environment and, you know, you name the subject. You know, he was there and he was one of the great progressives, which really shows you what has happened to American politics, because there was room in the Republican Party, the big tent, the big umbrella for everybody. And, you know, when that didn't happen anymore... He moved out of there. And by the way, it didn't last that long, because what he did was to shift control of the Senate. That's the big story.
Similar to New York, what happened to
the Democrats, yeah. Well, it hasn't happened yet in New York, has it?
Well, the Senate, the control, in other words, the control of the Senate was kept in Republican hands, essentially, by
Cuomo.
But by some Democrats who caucused with the Republicans.
Correct.
Yeah, that's a similar situation.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, don't get me started.
Don't get you started on
Alan,
that.
Alan, had you ever interviewed Senator Jeffords for WAMC?
You know, I don't remember.
Yeah.
This is a faulty memory of mine. I suspect I have, but I just don't remember. Sorry, guys.
The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. If you want to weigh in, and keep them relatively brief, and Alan will try to get to them as we go along here. In the news from Ferguson, New York Times reporting, violence erupted once more overnight, even as Missouri National Guard troops arrived, the latest in a series of quickly shifting attempts to quell the chaos that has upended this St. Louis suburb for more than a week. In the days since an unarmed black teenager, Michael Brown, was shot to death by a white police officer on August 9th, an array of state and local law enforcement authorities have swerved from one approach to another, taking to the streets in military-style vehicles and riot gear, then turning over power to a state highway patrol official who permitted the protests and marched along, then calling for a curfew. And then last night, yesterday, Governor Nixon said he was bringing in the National Guard. Hours later, said he was lifting the curfew. And Mike, seems like some people on the ground there are a bit confused by all of this.
Yeah, they keep changing tactics, and people, residents are saying they're confused. It's disrupting business. A lot of businesses are unable to open. Now it turns out they're going to delay the opening of school, which would have, in many people's minds, helped the community return to normalcy. And meanwhile, they said among the 31 people who were arrested last night were some people from New York and California. So it does seem that
so-called
it's
drawing, troublemakers.
Yeah, troublemakers, outside instigators, whatever you want to call
them.
Well,
it's very interesting. If you watch the video, the technique was to look at the crowd, because the crowd was largely law-abiding. You know, they were protesting in the best tradition of American protest. And, you know, one's heart can go out to them because, as I've said a million times, each of us who've had children, you know, have something in the game, have skin in the game. We know that it would be terrible to see our kid shot if, in fact, there's evidence and reason to believe that they didn't have to be, that they had their hands up or that they were shot many more times than they needed to be. I mean, so, but then what the video shows is that the state cops and others look into the crowd and find the guys who are not doing it the fair way or the right way, and they have them pulled out. They go right in and they arrest them. And that's a new way of doing it rather than holding the entire crowd responsible.
You know, I'm taken by the news reports, and almost all of them mentioned the fact that of the 31 arrested, some were from New York and California. And my question for you, Alan, especially one who has been on peace marches in your youth.
Indeed.
But isn't it appropriate? I'm not saying that these people from New York or California weren't arrested for a valid reason, but isn't it appropriate to come from a distance to march for something that you think strongly about?
No, it is appropriate, sure. I mean, you know, this is a problem. The reason it's on the front page of the New York Times and every other newspaper in America is because people are waiting with holding their breath to see if this takes off in their own areas. However, I will say to you that when in the old peace march days, there were always those people who got on the line intending to make trouble. You know, I wasn't going to make trouble if we weren't going down to D.C. to protest the war or you know, or to support something. We weren't making trouble, but there were always people who tried to instigate.
Organized?
Without saying who they were. Anybody who was there sort of remembers who they were.
Mm. And saying communists.
What'd you say?
You're saying communists.
Did I say that?
No. Are you implying that?
Well, it's anarchists. People who take the law into their own hands.
They would use it. They would try to use it to enhance their group.
Mm.
And they were resented. And that's why there were such, on the King marches and the rest, there were always marshals there, and a lot of them.
Mm.
Marshals working for the march.
Who would
spot these folks, and so there is something to be said about people who join these marches in order to create a certain amount of mayhem.
Well, it's been effective if they were seeking to keep this in the public interest. It's been effective in that regard. Unfortunately, that's what gets the most attention when there's violence and confrontation. If thousands of people had marched peacefully, it would have been a remarkable demonstration.
Yeah.
Right.
But exactly.
That's not what happened.
But what appears to have happened is, for the most part, this was peaceful.
Yes, it was. But
But Mike's point is this: for the most part, doesn't count. The media, and perhaps the media is responsible for some of this, always pays attention to the one or two who are outside the parameters.
The whole situation is curiouser and curiouser. There have been three, or there will be a third autopsy.
Mm-hmm.
And
it'll be a military autopsy. I guess a military forensic physician would be someone who would know how to read gunshot wounds and injuries better maybe than a typical medical examiner might. So that might yield some more information.
And it seems there is some sense of confusion as to the events, and perhaps appropriately so. The prosecutor not exactly forthcoming with all the information right away, and maybe that's the way it should be from an investigative standpoint.
But here you have the FBI, you have our friend Michael Baden from here, who is one of the top pathologists in the world, who get called in. Now you talk about the military perspective. And each of those places, Ray, you mentioned the prosecutor. Well, you know, that prosecutor operates within a group. He's got his police he has to worry about keeping happy. He's got his population that elect him that he has to worry about. So, but now when you get the FBI coming in at the instructions of the president or the attorney general, they have a different constituency.
And you're right. Holder, Attorney General Eric Holder, will be in Ferguson tomorrow to meet with FBI agents. They're conducting a civil rights investigation into these events. The president would seem to have been very measured in his statements yesterday. And here's what he said, as quoting from the New York Times. "While I understand the passions and the anger that arise over the death of Michael Brown, giving in to that anger by looting or carrying guns or even attacking the police only serves to raise tensions." So is the president striking the right tone here, Alan?
Well, the president, of course, has an agenda. He is a black man in America. He knows full well about the oppression that people of color have faced in this country. And he is going to leave office, and there's going to be a question asked. How did he make things better for the people who have suffered the longest and the hardest in America? That's different from a DA who is elected by a local constituency and has to, we all know about this, has to cooperate with the cops because they can make your life living hell if you don't, you know, if you don't get along with them. And so, again, I would posit that it's just a matter of what individual agendas are. And I think you can see what some of those differences are.
Do you think the president is concerned at this point more with his legacy or affecting a peaceful resolution on the ground in Ferguson?
Well, I think that's unfair to suggest that he's thinking about his own image. I think it's more what Alan was saying. I mean, when you're the, you know, commander in chief, yet what you're trying to do is make this be a permanent peace and make it somehow pull from it something good, because at least it's brought up the discussion of racial tensions that do still exist. Some people think that we're beyond that.
He thinks so. He's talked about post-racial.
Right. And I guess this demonstrates that there needs to be more work. There needs to be more discussion and education and efforts to, bring sides together. So, in one sense, perhaps the benefit of this is to realize that this is a continuing process and not something that we already put to bed.
Well, and we had a long discussion yesterday about racial politics as well as the politics of have and have not. But it's very hard to separate those.
Right, they go hand in hand often.
Sure. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Take a short break here and be back with the Roundtable panel. It's 9:25.
Support comes from PS21, Performance Spaces for the 21st Century, Chatham, New York, presenting Take Dance, Performing Somewhere Familiar Melodies, and two other works on Friday, August 22nd and Saturday, August 23rd at 8 p.m. PS21Chatham.org. Shedman Custom Woodworks, building garden and storage sheds, gazebos, and outdoor furniture for over 25 years. New Lebanon and Brunswick, New York, shedman.com for inventory. And Curran Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York, hosting a national symposium on life insurance compliance November 12th through the 14th at the Gideon Putnam Resort, Saratoga Springs. Registration now open, currancompliance.com.
The Roundtable on WAMC, Tuesday, August 19th already. Where has the summer gone? It seems like
we'll
be back to school in no time. Mike Spain is here from the TU. WAMC's Alan Chartok, Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Man, Where did it go? It never really got hot this summer for very long.
Well, you weren't in Columbia.
Oh, yeah, it was warm there?
Warm. It was hell. I mean, it was really, really hot.
It's humid in Columbia?
Oh, humid. Oh, my God.
Really?
Tropical climate? And the lovely Roselle, who, as you all know, is a world traveler, takes people all over the place. She said, this is just too hot for me.
Really? Yeah. Even for Roselle? But she had fun on the trip.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was much cooler in Maine.
Was it?
Yeah.
Maine? Columbia?
Yeah. It's a bit of a drive from southern Maine.
It's longer to Maine, right, than Columbia? Because I went up there one time. You know, it's only 5 or 6 hours on the plane to Columbia.
That's right.
Yeah.
And, it's a five-hour drive if you take the scenic route.
Yeah. If you've ever gone up to the Lake District, which we did once, visit some people, I thought we'd never get there. I'm quite sure we could have been in California 2 or 3 times.
Well, you're correct about the flight. I mean, Columbia, as the crow flies, or as the airplane flies out of Kennedy, is pretty much like going to Southern California.
It's only Kennedy that is really bothersome. That is really a terrible airport.
Would you go back?
To Kennedy?
Reluctantly.
To Columbia.
Oh, yeah, I'd go back.
Yeah.
It was terrific.
Well, that's good. And Roselle was satisfied with the results of the vacation?
Yes. Yeah, she really is. She really believes in multiculturalism of every kind, and she goes around, and there isn't a single church or spire or, you know, or inside of something that she doesn't go to, which is why we have worked it out in our marriage, which is one event a day in the morning, the afternoon is mine.
I get the feeling,
drink the coffee.
You know, maybe I'm wrong, but I get the feeling you'd rather be behind your desk most of the time.
Yeah, it's true. But I have to say, it's always a relief to sort of go, and then you realize how much pressure there is at work. In general. You know, I mean.
But you're compulsive. You check your work email all the time.
I do.
You weigh in all the time. I've made a vow on my vacations to not check work email.
Really?
In other words, if people need me at work, they have my text, they have my phone, it's always with me.
Sure, sure.
So in order to mentally escape from the pressures of the workday, you got to let go a little
bit. But you want to. That's the secret.
But I want to let go?
Yeah. As opposed to me.
You want to stay tied.
Well, I'm afraid I'll come back and I'll be deposed.
Ah,
it's always important to just keep track of
that. Yeah.
Well, yesterday Marketplace had the story about how there are many, you know, I think like 7% of Americans don't take any vacation, even though they have it.
They can.
And it's our culture.
Those are the radio people.
Right. Well, the radio people. Yeah. The culture is to work hard, and some bosses like to exploit that. They say 13% of bosses will actually look more favorably on people who skip their vacation and work like crazy.
I'll be darned, said Ray.
Yeah.
But I can tell you this much. When WAMC, a lot of people don't know AMC stands for Albany Medical College. And when we came over, we took the vacation policy of the Albany Medical College, which was very liberal.
Yes. Well, More or less. Hey, let's take a break
more or less, he says.
We'll have some news, and then we'll be back. You can tell we vamped for a couple of minutes because there wasn't time to start a new topic. But then after the news, we're going to talk about some important things.
All right.
All right. Goodbye. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Time is 9:36. It's the Roundtable panel. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, along with the Times Union's Mike Spain and WAMC's Alan Shartok. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. And, Alan, we have some.
We do. We do. My device isn't working.
But we have a hard copy.
Yeah, now we have hard
copy. Sarah Leduc brought it in.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to say that some of the violent leftists in Ferguson don't speak for everyone on the far left. I'm an anarchist socialist and also a pacifist, and I think many of us on the fringe left are sickened by violent protesters ruining what the citizens of Ferguson are fighting for.
Now, for a moment, political scientist.
Yeah, sure.
Anarchy, is a violent, not necessarily toward humans, but a violent takedown of the system integral to anarchy? And I honestly don't know the answer to this.
Well, you know, I'm not sure I know either, but I think my impression, Mike, you can come in on this, is that anarchy is meaning that you don't really believe in government. That doesn't mean you're throwing Molotov cocktails. So
often we associate anarchists with violence, but when you actually dissect it, it's people who don't accept the system. Okay. You know, yeah. All so right. you could be peacefully working to, you know, replace the system.
All right. Now, systematically trying to replace the system.
Yeah. Now, here comes something from Peter.
Okay.
Roundtable. I'm glad we're conducting airstrikes in Iraq. The genocide must stop. That being said, airstrikes are very costly. $40,000 per hour for a fighter jet plus armament. The money for these actions always appears, yet money for our own people in the form of higher wages, better schools, food jobs, inner city reconstruction is never available. Well, not never available. Your kids, a lot of kids go to school. And a lot of people, garbage gets picked up.
I get the point.
Yeah, but we get the point. It's always guns or butter. Right? Okay. Please comment. All right.
You did.
Andy says, I have heard that the prosecuting DA, I guess in Ferguson, lost his father, quote, in the line of duty and is very unlikely to prosecute. I know nothing.
I'd be surprised if the local, the decision on whether to prosecute this case will be strictly that of a local guy.
well, it could be, but it, no, I mean, I think, look, we
That's
have
why one, the feds are out there.
We have a wonderful district attorney here, David Soares, and when the governor decided to sort of beat up on the Occupy people here, Soares, and it's not easy in New York State, we have a very powerful governor, stood up to him. And got a lot of credit for it, but nobody thought he was doing it for any other reason except that he thought he was doing what was right. And then Joan writes, do you know what the situation is with regard to military equipment and the Albany police? Mike, you might know about this. And what training they get for using it, and that's from Joan from Sprakers.
I mean, that's a good question. We have an editorial today talking about the dilemma of the over-militarization of police, exemplified by what's been going on in Ferguson.
Got to get you a cough button.
Yes, I need a cough button, right, but I'm well, much better now.
Or the studio's redesigned, we'll work that out.
Or a cough drop.
Right, a cough drop. But anyway, so that's sort of a leftover from 9/11. After 9/11, police agencies all over the country started using grant money. They were handing out like crazy, and they were militarizing. And
now, you said, just let me interrupt for a minute. You said at the very outset, the over-militarization of the police, which is...
Pejorative, you think that's opinionated?
Perhaps.
Yes. Well, I think some are complaining that police right away in Missouri, and it could happen elsewhere, were, you know, in fatigues, aiming guns at crowds, et cetera. And in Albany, you remember last year that police were practicing a SWAT team exercise in a city housing project. They didn't adequately inform residents, and people were terrified.
They didn't inform
it.
Us. I heard it on the scanner, and I we got to get on this, people, and then we figured it out.
And the police chief since apologized and said they would be much more communicative. But it does. There may be a time when you need it, but by having it may result in having it come out too soon.
You know what? Maybe they did tell us. There was one time before that where it sounded very serious, and I told the people down the other side of the newsroom, I said, you better call over there. And they
immediately
kind of, with an arched eyebrow and a smirk, said, oh, no, this is a drill. WAMC News, relax.
Well, residents of the housing complex, city housing complex, were terrified.
No, I remember that quite well.
I mean, there was some fallout from it, but it just, it's an example of how police do have a lot of this equipment appropriately. When they need it, they need to bring it out, but perhaps they're bringing it out, and it's insightful to see it so quickly on the streets.
It seems to be a fine line, and in the old days, this was not the case. You didn't have armored vehicles and everything else. Should that be exclusively in the circle of the National Guard?
I don't think so. I mean, I think police are people. They have to be protected. They have children. They have relatives. And if there are safer ways to do it, you do it. Of course, if you abuse it, that's when things get serious.
Okay.
In other words, if you use it because you have it.
I saw an interesting opinion piece, I believe it was in the National Review, that said all police should have cameras. In other words, there should be video happened outside that patrol car.
Well, more and more we have that. We have it on the cars, right?
It's on cars. Some uniforms have cameras on their shoulders, et cetera.
I think that's right. It's very interesting.
It protects everybody.
I taught at the John Jay School of Criminal Justice in New York, College of Criminal Justice, and, I had a lot of cops in my classes. And I have to tell you, they are human beings, people, who are just like us. They put their pants on one at a time, and they have to go out there and they have to confront the worst possible situations, which most of us don't. You know, it's
and never will.
That's that simple. I mean, if there's trouble, and you never know. Here on Central Avenue, every once in a while, you see something. I came in yesterday at my usual 4 o'clock in the morning. And
why do you do that?
There were three. there were three patrol cars with their lights on in front of down in front of Mickey D's.
Yeah.
I don't think they were getting hamburgers, but you know. But who knows? You know, you just never know.
Yeah.
One day I was, I had to stay over during the fun drive here, and I was up in the apartment, and I was looking out the window very early in the morning. And I saw a guy crawling over there's a sort of an awning over the building opposite, and he's jimmying open a window, and he's going in. Now, how many? Now, what's your first impression? You know, you're seeing a burglary in progress.
Somebody was locked out.
Or somebody's locked out. It turned one or the other.
It turned out somebody was but a lot of police cars showed up, I'll tell you, and they didn't know what was, you know, what they were going to find.
To help them get in?
well, apparently that was the method, main method of entry at the time. So Ryan wants us to know, anarchism is a lack of hierarchy, guys. Well, we sort of said that.
Yeah.
I believe in a government that is not hierarchical. In other words, for me, a direct democracy run on community scale would be ideal. However, every anarchist is different. I do not advocate for an overthrow of our government, but rather a peaceful transition. Yeah, I think we sort of said that.
But can society be sustained when rights are not protected by some authority? That is a question for political scientist.
Yeah, and it's a question for all of us, Ray. It's not only for you.
No, I'm asking you. They're not on the mic. I'm asking you.
Yeah. So, no.
All right, Mike, you can also answer.
Yeah. No, that's fine. I'm ready to hear Alan answer.
Well, it's always a question of balance. It's always a question of when is it too much? One of the things in the society is that people opt for safety over everything else. So if you say, I'm going to keep you safe by being a fascist or by being a dictator, quite often they take it. And with some interesting results. When we went to Spain early in the 70s, and we were there for just a little while, hold your letters, folks, and Franco was still in charge.
Was Generalissimo.
He was still alive.
And there were people at 2 o'clock in the morning putting baby carriages in the park opposite us. When we went several years later, post-Franco, there was much more crime. And there were other issues. Now, I'm not saying that I think Franco, who had a ability to grab some people and...
he had a mixed record, I guess, is what you're saying.
So, but are people willing to balance the need for protection, which they almost always opt for, in these situations?
Immediately they do when they're threatened. Yeah. And then over time, the NSA is a good example. In 2002, probably people would have been happy to have the NSA snooping. Today, it's not so acceptable.
Well said, Mike.
Is that it on the email for now?
I'm afraid it is.
All right, sir. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. 9:46 is the time. It's the roundtable panel. And Mike Spain, it's been a few days since you've had a casino story. And by golly, the Times Union has one, half a loaf in casino deal.
Yeah, it's a story by our Albany reporter, Jordan Carlio Evangelist. And from reading it, you get a sense that the Albany's Common Council and the mayor, Kathy Sheehan, are hedging their bets when it comes to which casino to support. There's two casino plans for across the river. One's right across the river in the city of Rensselaer, which is a stone's throw from downtown Albany. And there's one up in East Greenbush that's proposed by another developer. And both of these developers are seeking licenses from the state to open a casino. There'll only be one. And they want the city of Albany to throw their support behind each of their plans. But the city of Rensselaer says, if you do it, we'll give you $1 million a year for 10 years, but you can't have two girlfriends. You got to only back me. You can't back the other guy. And the common council members...
You can only have two girlfriends?
You cannot have two girlfriends. You can only
have
one
girlfriend. The email address is roundtable. Or you can just write Alan. Alan at WAMC.org.
Right.
All right, continue, Mike.
You are going to only have one casino to back here. And the mayor of Rensselaer is looking at the plan that was approved by the Common Council last night. They basically are looking for more than $1 million a year over the 10-year life of the license. They want to get some promises about jobs.
Now, this is Albany would get
residents.
Money for something that
that's
is
right.
across
Rensselaer
the river.
Rensselaer would share its profits. It's going to get like $5 million a year from the casino under the plan.
Right.
They'll give $1 million of that to their neighbors across the way. If the neighbors across the way in Albany now promise to support Rensselaer's
and they would
casino.
Do that because they would have more possibility of getting the casino.
Yes.
Is that right?
If the city of Albany, which doesn't have a casino plan anymore itself, there was one, but it didn't work out. If they would back the Rensselaer one, that would perhaps compel or sway the people on the State Gaming License Commission to say, well, this is going to have a broader impact. That's the kind of thing we want. It's going to help more than just one community. Let's do it.
I would think, given the situation in Massachusetts, where all these host community agreements have gone down and all the surrounding communities get a cut, that even the East Greenbush Casino will say, well, look, we have either an equal offer or a better offer. Albany being the largest reason that either one of these casinos will succeed.
That's right. They're going to draw from Albany.
They will get something. And maybe they should wait and see what's the
better
deal. Well,
that's the idea. They're waiting. The lobbyist for the East Greenbush proposal is said something will be delivered, and they're looking. They want to be able to look at that also. The Rensselaer mayor had said, no, that's not the deal. You got to back us or have back nobody. You know, or you don't get a penny.
To which Albany should say, well, no, we'll back both or none. Or
right. And they want two girlfriends here. Right?
Well, Alan at WAMC.org.
We always share, you know. One of the worst things that ever happened was moving the train station across the river.
I think that's widely agreement there.
Yeah, it was.
There was a beautiful train station.
Yeah, what was the right word for it? It was stupid.
Ah. Yeah, I think that's a good word.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, so we got some mail.
Okay.
Hi, panel. You are all discussing rabble-rousers coming to Ferguson. When I see Al Sharpton on the scene, I know the event is becoming a media circus. When Al shows up, it is equivalent to the jumping the shark.
Which I believe is a Happy Days reference toward the later years of Happy Days.
Oh, no, it was Fonzie
jumped a shark. It signaled the end of the program.
Okay. And the tragic event is now fueled by the media, and it's now time to move on. Perhaps it stays on the news as the dysfunctional Congress is out of session.
Well, that's a point. A summer generally known as the silly season, and all sorts of things.
Kind of the pre-silly season, that the election season is going to really take off soon, too.
And Gary.
Yes.
I was just thinking of a joke, which I better not tell.
Okay, I'm glad.
Gary says, good morning. Alan is correct on the infiltration of outside agitators in Ferguson. I remember an SDS cell in Columbia, meaning Columbia College, University, in the 60s found out that over 50% of their group were actually FBI plants.
Fascinating.
Mm. Well, we just read them. We don't know.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
And then Rich says, interesting how Albany police war games are held at housing projects. And Jules says, the military is trained to fight an enemy. The police are trained to protect the public. Big difference.
Mm.
Well, there would be those in the military who would say, no, we're there to protect also. You know, they would make that.
All right,
order.
There's more. We'll have to take an underwriting break, but go right ahead.
Okay, Tom, if the job of being a cop is so dangerous that you can't do it professionally without shooting people, you shouldn't be in the job.
All right, fair enough. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. Mr. Hopper, we'll take a break and then back, and we'll talk about how expensive it is to raise a child.
Support comes from the Clark Art Institute, Williamstown, Massachusetts, now reopened with a newly expanded campus and the return of the permanent collection on view. clarkart.edu. And Hudson Valley Foot Associates, podiatric physicians and surgeons treating foot problems with offices in Ulster, Dutchess, Columbia, Orange, and Delaware counties. HVFA.com.
It's the Roundtable, boys and girls. Lighthearted bumper music and a lighthearted program. Alan Shartok is here. Mike Spain.
Not so lighthearted.
Ray Graff
here.
I'll
take exception to that.
Yeah, for Joe Donahue. It's 9:52. Some more mail. Good heavens.
Yeah. Additional questions need to be asked. How many of Ferguson's police live in Ferguson? Daryl Wilson lives somewhere else in a largely white community. Where is the police vehicle now in which Williams was patrolling the streets? It is now evident because it should contain a bullet hole, according to Wilson's account. Where is Wilson? Is he coordinating the story with the police chief? Most news commentary focuses on crowd violence, not a history of police violence. And that's from Paul and Amherst.
Okay.
And from James, I have heard very little on the media or Washington as who is funding this warfare in the Middle East and to what efforts are being made by the West to challenge these sources. Iran appears to be an obvious source, possibly the Saudis and some of the smaller oil-rich Arab states, and that's from from Demetrius, okay? And Jamie says, with Atlantic City having the largest casino bankruptcy in state history, why are you still talking about casinos?
Well, they're coming to New York, and we'll see how they fly. Perhaps the rampant bankruptcies of Atlantic City were advance of their
right,
main...
It's the New Yorkers who are no longer going there because they're waiting for their own.
Right.
Nah.
No?
No. Well, I think one could make the argument that New Yorkers are not going. Well, you know about this, Ray.
Yeah.
But I think one could make the argument that New Yorkers are not going to go when the New York casinos get opened up. But right now, you think they're sitting home and saying, I'm going to wait for...
They're going to Turning Stone in Connecticut.
They're going to Connecticut. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right. Let's shift gears here. Great story out of the AP. The cost of having a kid, $245,340. Dateline Washington, a message for new parents. Get ready for sticker shock. A child born in 2013 will cost a middle-income American family an average of $245,340 until he or she reaches the age of 18, with families living in the Northeast, that's us, taking on a greater burden. According to a report out Monday, and that doesn't include college or expenses if a child lives at home after age 17. So we knew this. It's expensive to raise a kid.
It is. And you have five children.
I do.
And we're going to talk about this on the Vox Pop this afternoon.
We're going to open the phones and have everybody complain about how expensive it is?
But talk about how it's worth it, talk about the joys of having children, and like that. Just Pampers alone could cost a lot of money.
Right.
And
you get the store brand.
We were very lucky at our house because we had a wonderful neighbor who was in the paper products business.
Yeah.
We lived in Alford. And every so often, the UPS truck would roll up and out would come the Pampers.
Well,
we never
nice.
Bought a Pamper.
Of course, the environmentally friendly thing to do is use, cloth diapers.
That's absolutely true. And I take back everything I just said. But it was quite wonderful.
Well, Mike, you have offspring. And does this...
raised five children and they've been launched. So it's not costing me anything right now.
But it was expensive, wasn't it?
It was, but not nearly this expensive.
What's the compounded interest on $245,000? Are you getting a good check every month?
I just did the math, and over 18 years, it's like $13,000 a year that you're supposed to now, going forward, pay for a child. And of course, that's an average. Obviously, people who have greater means will even spend more, and others will spend less. But it's expensive having kids.
Here's the thing: you have five. I have five. According to this report, after two, the expenses go down.
That's true. So it's economy. It's economizing.
It's like going to Sam's Club.
That's
and getting
right.
children. You get a bulk and it's cheaper and everything.
No, but you make an interesting point because you have a lot of the stuff left over.
Right, lots of hand-me-downs.
Yeah. But now our daughter just had a wonderful child and people they have parties and people load her up with stuff that their kids...
How did I miss that train?
We should get a party for college and... College
well, that's another whole story. This does
right,
not
this,
count
this
college.
Goes only up to college.
Yeah. And we're now talking about, and this is something I've been thinking about a lot, private or independent colleges that are costing $60,000 a year.
That's another topic, right?
Yeah.
But interesting, in this report, the 1960 number, which was $25,230, is equivalent to $198,500-some-odd.
Oh, interesting.
So it's very similar. The price is about the same.
Right, so the out of pocket because of inflation, this $245,000 per child won't seem that much in 20 years or 18 years.
But think about this: in the old days, there were a lot of stay-at-home moms. That is not happening as much as it used to happen.
There are now more stay-at-home dads.
Yeah,
not that mom.
Right, but no, more no, more two-income households.
Here's my point. Yeah. Here's my point, because two-income households are terribly important. And so what we did is we spent one whole salary on child care. One whole salary by the time, you know, it was all done.
And that's a very expensive component, child care. And so I think even more interesting in the 1960 number is that $25,000 is equivalent to $198,000 today.
Exactly.
Let's talk about why we have such rampant inflation over the last 50 years.
It was the Carter administration, I believe.
That was their fault?
Yes.
Oh, well, all right. And Mike doesn't have a WAMC email address, but if you send it to roundtable@WAMC.org, we'll forward it to Mike.
I was kidding, President Carter.
Yeah, you were, and we got it.
I know.
You're a good man.
All right, so you and I will do a Vox Pop on this topic today at 2.
Right.
You were going to do it, but now somehow you dragged me into this.
Well, because you know much more about it than I do, because you have 5 children.
Just the cost of outfitting a soccer player explains why this is this way. Wouldn't you say, Ray?
Yeah, or how about a hockey player?
Oh, my goodness. I can't even imagine.
Or buying a kid a trombone.
Yeah, or that.
And music lessons and getting him a decent trombone whatever.
Yeah, or backpacks. It's back to school time. You look at the expenses, and I've made this complaint before. Schools, in our day, Mike, you brought a notebook, a 3-ring binder, you brought it to school, you brought a brown bag lunch. Now the schools, each class has, you have to have a trifold purple. You have to have 7 pencils. You have to have this. And it's that way for every class, and it's very specific, and I want to know why.
Well, I can tell you one thing. One of the reasons I have no memory is because I was eating those pencils.
Well, that's a great way to end the show. And, you know, it's time, and the first hour is over, and we'll be back with more.